Welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 26th of June 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at RadioAlbion.com, because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story ever told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic victory of World War II, and the audio-only version of Churchill's Body Count, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, hello,
thank you, sir.
How are you doing?
Well, I kind of went off the grid for a couple of weeks. Like, I was trying to work out, you know, the communist attack on both America and on Britain and the means that they're doing it. And, you know, you just sent me down a rabbit hole just a couple of hours ago, like, when you asked me to look into a section of what we're doing tonight, and that's wrecked me as well. So I'm sat here quite wrecked at the moment.
Tired out with all the research. Well, you must have been doing a lot of research, because you still haven't got the Churchill videos up yet, Dennis.
No, what's going on? Well, I just feel there's one or two more important things going on at the moment, to be honest. I think people know Churchill were a psychopath for now.
Well, there are 10 episodes, I think, on Churchill that we did. I had a look there the other day, and there were only 6 of them showing, I think. So I had to alter the HTML, but all 10 of them are showing now, because I think that was quite a good series we did. I'm quite proud of that series. And I think viewers will enjoy it as well once it's finally been produced. But we've had so much stuff going on this week. I mean, we could do a show just talking about the news. Last week we had a terror attack. We had after Black Lives Matter, 3 people killed, lots of people stabbed. And now today in Scotland, we've got the same again. And they're telling us that it's not terror related, but it's quite obviously immigrant related, the same as last week's was immigrant related. But, you know, they just don't want to connect the dots, do they? They don't want to actually tell us that link is there, that these attacks are being carried out by foreigners on our soil. And the reason why they're here is all part of this long plan that goes back centuries to subvert our nations, that ties in with Freemasonry, it ties in with Jews as well, that wish to fulfill their prophecies and have them leading the world, as we've been getting into in this series. But it's really, really hotting up now with the destruction of the statues and as well as the breakdown of civilization. We've got these terrorist attacks that are going on, and the people that should be covering it and talking about it, they're covering it all up. It's like it's all just ratcheted up a gear, don't you think?
Well, the thing is, I talk about this right wing and left wing of the victors of World War II, and I noticed one bright spot for me this week was in Poland, where the elections are due to take place, and he looks odds on to win the president, where they've got to a state now where the church and state are more or less joined. And they're bringing out anti-Marxist laws, as such as the LGBT have been banned from 1/3 of the area of Poland. They're not allowed to go in that area, with other laws to go out as well. They've also banned same-sex marriage as well. So this is all, you know, Christianity going in the right direction, I feel. Although it's a Catholic country, you know, they're not doing the will of the Vatican by the looks of things, which of course is the Pope always kind of portrays a new world order as the right thing, and the immigrants and everything else we should go along with. So Poland at the moment is fighting back, and Trump has met with the Polish premier under great attacks from home, and he's kind of thinking of the troops that he's withdrawing from Germany. I remember 20,000 he was negotiating to transfer into Poland. Now, we spoke again a couple of weeks ago about when he walked across that road for the press call, the photo shoot, when he lifted the Bible up in the air. He didn't actually say anything. He was asked what the group was, and he said, "Oh, it's the Bible," quietly. Held the Bible up in the air. And I'm tending to think that the ranks are now forming for this right and left wing battle for dominance over the world.
There are certainly glimmers of hope, aren't there? Definitely in Poland, definitely in Hungary, also in Russia. I mean, Russia have put a part about Christianity, I think, in their constitution, that Russia is built on Christian principles. Hungary is standing up for that. That could be what we're seeing. We could see this split between right and left, between Christian and and anti-Christian. I mean, that's what the battle's been about all along, really. I just wish that more people would see it. You know, that's what really gets me, is the pagan types that have fallen for the, you know, for the New Ageism. And they've fallen for this anti-Christian, because that's what it really is. That's what it's all been about for the last 2,000 years, is Christianity against the forces against Christianity, whether that's Masonry, whether that's Marxism, whether it's Talmudism. It's all tied in together. It's all the forces of chaos wanting to take down what God has created and what man has created, and specifically what we've created as white people. So it ties in with that as well. Spiritual.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah.
But as we covered in the last couple of weeks, talking about how this all came about through this book, Grand Orient Freemasonry Unmasked, we're going to get into that again today. Before we do that, I'll just say there is an audio version of the book, apparently. Someone left a link in the Discus comments last week to a proper professionally made audio book version of this, if anyone wants to have a listen to it. And as we said before, this was originally written in 1884, and then it was reprinted in 1950. It was originally published as The War of Antichrist with the Church and Christian Civilization, which really, you know, that really sums it all up. That's what it is. It's the forces against God, against the forces of God. And unfortunately today, most of the people that think they are Christians, you know, they're working for the other side. And that's exactly what was going on here. This is why these lectures were actually given. And they were given to Protestants as well as Catholics, because they could see that, you know, they needed to get these Protestants on side, even if the church had split, you know.
And the thing is, once the Protestants had helped them destroy the Catholic Church, it was only a simple job then, ever that day comes, to destroy the Protestant Church.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later on today. And we'll start with a recap of what we talked about last week. We talked about how the Jewish rejection of Logos is the source of discord in the world, because they rejected Logos, they rejected truth. They set themselves up against it, basically. And their prophecies said that they should be ruling over the nations. But the Catholic Church says that we should have Christ ruling over the nations. So obviously there's a discord there, and that's at the source of things like the United Nations, the EU, the New World Order, all these supranational organizations. They all have this Jewish influence, and that's because that fulfills the Jewish prophecies, whereas the Christian prophecy, so all that is going to be destroyed, and Babylon is going to fall. So we also talked about how this is not anti-Semitic to be talking about this, because as Christians you are supposed to reject degeneracy, and you're supposed to speak up about things which are anti-Christian. It's not anti the Jews themselves, it's anti the things that they promote. And we talked about the Jewish definition of anti-Semitism, which is things that Jews don't like, things that people say that Jews don't like, because the people that say in them, maybe somebody like E. Michael Jones, who says how much he loves Jews, but you know, he will be critical of them because he loves them, and yet the Jews will say, accuse him of being anti-Semite for saying that. Do you want to add anything to that, Dennis?
Well, I think it was Benjamin Friedman who actually said that anti-Semitism was a code name for communism, and this is classed as hate speech in countries which are not tied down with the Holocaust laws, and this has been admitted by a Jewish prime minister in an interview, where said it's a trick they use to stop criticism.
Yeah, it's to silence people exposing all of this, basically. They accuse it of being anti-Semitism because it's exposing what's going on. We talked about how the loss of sovereignty is also anti-Christian, because God created the nations, and they're not supposed to be ruling over one another. They're supposed to be ruling over themselves. So all supranational organizations are anti-Christian in their essence, because it's saying that one group of people is going to rule over another group, and each group is supposed to be sovereign over itself. That's why we had kings, because the king was supposed to be ruling over us. We talked about how the French Revolution and human rights all had their origins in Masonry, and the human rights that are held to be so sacrosanct today, they were thought up by these Masons, and the Masons were basically just puppets of the Jews, because the Jews didn't actually have civil rights at that time, so they couldn't take part in civil society, so they would get the Masons to do what they wanted them to do. And eventually that led to the emancipation of the Jews. And we showed that it was the Jews in the French Revolution, in the parliament there, that actually pushed for this emancipation of the Jews. We talked about this word progress that we hear, how we've got to be progressive and we're finally making progress. And that's a very old word. And I'll quote from the book here: after every successful Masonic revolution since the first in 1789, down to and including the Spanish Revolution in 1931, the world soon began to hear of the countries entering upon the path of progress. And I think that was quite it's quite important, that, because we do hear that all the time, isn't it? It's a buzzword.
Can I just say that the first, found out just tonight, actually, reading this PDF, I just got the first war between the English and the French. It was an English-French Freemasonry war. Temple Mason, Napoleon Bonaparte, attempted to spread republicanism across Europe. But the Zionist plot, these are the Prayer of Sion, who you'll know from the fake, what Jews call them, fake, anyway, you know, the plots of Zion. They plotted against Napoleon. It was the wealth of British masonry that guaranteed Napoleon's failure. So, that was looks like it was a Freemason war between the English and the French.
They've had a lot to do with all of these wars, basically. And as I mentioned, the EU there earlier, here's another direct quote. Back in 1922, the Assembly of the Grand Lodge of France insisted that among the tasks lying ahead was the creation of a European spirit, the formation of the United States of Europe, or rather the Federation of the World. We've got both of those now. We've got the EU and we've got the UN, and they've gone one step further. And instead of suggesting that all the European nations should be just seeing themselves as European, they're saying all the nations of the world should be able to see themselves as European. We should be able to bring in Africans and Pakistanis and Indians and Chinese. And,
is that what they're doing?
And they can all be called European. So they've gone one step further. And finally, we talked a little bit about Bolshevism. On the far side of the Iron Curtain, we see the continuation of what was stated by Mr. Oudendijk, the Dutch minister at St. Petersburg, and published in the British White Paper of April 1919. Unless Bolshevism is nipped in the bud immediately, it is bound to spread in one form or another all over Europe and the whole world, as it is organized and worked by Jews who have no nationality and whose one object is to destroy for their own ends the existing order of things. And that section of the White Paper was later inexplicably removed. But it was no different from what people like Churchill were saying. He's on record as saying that. And there were also intelligence reports that were talking about how Bolshevism was massively Jewish, and it was the Jews in all the different countries of the world that were pushing this idea for communism. And that was how it took off so quickly, because it had these essentially agents for communism that were everywhere. And now we'll move into the new content that we've got for you here. And the first bit is a quote from G.K. Chesterton's Weekly. And we'll talk about G.K. Chesterton in a minute, but this is from his weekly from February the 4th, 1937, and in it has Mr. Hilary Belloc speaking, who was a good friend of Chesterton's. And Hilary Belloc wrote, "As for anyone who does not know that the present revolutionary Bolshevik movement in Russia is Jewish, I can only say that he must be a man who is taken in by the suppressions of our deplorable press. Anyone who carefully studies the rulers of Russia and of the satellite states Poland and Hungary, for example, at the present day, will have the same conclusion forced upon him. And this was written in 1890 or 1950. This is the introduction again. So this introduction was written in 1950. And that was obviously Hilary Belloc writing in 1937 that Poland and Hungary and Russia, they all had basically had Jewish rulers. And what I find interesting about this is Chesterton and Hilary Belloc, they weren't supportive of National Socialism at all, but they were critical of Jews. And this shows us that the Jewish question was talked about throughout society. It wasn't something that was taboo like it is today. It was spoken about at the highest levels of the establishment. It wasn't seen as something that can't be talked about at all. And these were very well thought of men, G.K. Chesterton and Hilary Belloc. Had you heard of Hilary Belloc?
I hadn't, no, but briefly looked him up today. And he was born in 1870, died 1953. He was a British-French writer, historian, and one of the most prolific writers in England during the 20th century. He wrote nearly 150 books, apparently. He was heavily influenced back from being a Catholic from 1906 to 1910. He was a Liberal Party Member of Parliament for Salford South. He was also at one stage the president of the Oxford Union, where he gained a reputation as a great debater. But yeah, no, I had never been previous to this, no.
But he was really very influential in Catholicism. I think he was responsible for quite a few people actually converting to Catholicism. And this is in Britain, where you've got the, you know, the Anglican Church, and you've got quite a lot of anti-Catholic feeling. But he was, really, really supportive of the traditional strand in Catholicism alongside G.K. Chesterton. And they came up with the idea of distributism, which I'll talk about again in a minute. But G.K. Chesterton, as I was saying, he was well thought of. He wasn't looked on like somebody like Nick Griffin or anyone like that. He was very well thought of, but he was often accused of anti-Semitism. And I thought I got an interesting bit here about what he says about it. Chesterton was an English writer often accused of anti-Semitism, which helps to demonstrate how anti-Semitism does not mean voicing a dislike of Jews, but Jews disliking what someone is saying. In his book, The New Jerusalem, Chesterton dedicated a chapter to his views on the Jewish question, the sense that Jews were a distinct people without a homeland of their own, living as foreigners in countries where they were always a minority. He wrote that in the past, his position was always called anti-Semitism, but it was always much more true to call it Zionism. My friends and I had in some general sense a policy in the matter, and it was in substance the desire to give Jews the dignity and status of a separate nation. We desired that in some fashion, and so far as possible, Jews should be represented by Jews, should live in a society of Jews, should be judged by Jews, and ruled by Jews. I am an anti-Semite, if that is anti-Semitism. It would seem more rational to call it Semitism. And that is nationalist feeling there, really. It's saying that they should have their own homeland, and they should be ruled by their own people. And that is, I feel the same way. I think, Jews should have their own place. Blacks should have their own place. Chinese should have their own place. White people should have their own place. It's not a hateful thing to say in any way, shape or form. But it's interesting that he was being called an anti-Semite for saying that at the time. And now they actually have this. And, if you speak against Israel, then you're called an anti-Semite, even though you're talking against Zionism.
Yeah, my problem with this is that I don't believe that the Jews down there are actually Jews. These are the Eastern European Khazars, who really have no claim at all to anything down that way. That's the problem that I've got with them. I think it's also a problem what original Sephardic Jews have with them, because some of them won't move to Israel because of this situation.
Well, I think a lot of it plays in with Freemasonry, and not so much...
Oh, sure.
traditional Judaism. The traditional Judaism, if you look at the Sephardics and the Karaites, there's one group that don't even follow the Talmud, and they just follow the first five books of the Bible. And why would they have any interest in going back there and rebuilding the temple? All that sort of stuff comes from Freemasonry wanting to rebuild the temple, and this idea of having Jerusalem as the central court. They want somewhere for an international court, which is anti-Christian because it's international, so it's Antichrist.
And they want
to put it in Jerusalem, the place where Christ was crucified, and they want to spit in God's eye and say, we're going to rebuild the temple that you destroyed, because that was part of the Christian prophecy as well, was that the temple would be destroyed and it would never be rebuilt. So this is why the Jews want to go and rebuild it, because it's spitting in the eye of God, basically, and spitting in the eye of the Christians. That's the point of it, which, you know, it's a satanic thing, isn't it? It's not a Christian thing. Totally satanic. So this is what I mean by their ideas are the opposite of the Christian ideas, and that's, you know, that's what this Catholic speaker is basically laying out here. And Chesterton, I think he's probably saying what most people were saying at the time. You know, Jews should have their own place, because there are obviously problems that are caused between them living in our countries and us, basically. And there always has been, and that's not to be anti-Semitic. Jews have been expelled from countries 109 times, so obviously there is friction there.
Well, I don't think the problem is from having their own country. I think the problem is their ultimate aim is world government, whether it be from Jerusalem or wherever they manage to get it. But that is something that we've got to, you know, be aware of.
And again, they're on record saying that enough times that's what they're aiming for, and that's what they say their prophecies tell them, that they will rule over everybody else, whereas the Christian prophecy says, well, if you obey God, you'll be given everything. But the Jews' books tell them how they can achieve this, how they can deceive the people that they live among so that they can get them as essentially becoming servants for them, which it teaches them in the Talmud. Continuing with this bit on Chesterton, in the same place as this book, The New Jerusalem, he proposed the thought experiment, describing it as a parable and a flippant fancy, that Jews should be admitted to any role in English public life on condition that they must wear distinctively Middle Eastern garb, explaining that the point is that we should know where we are, and he would know where he is, which is in a foreign land. And I find that interesting as well, because we've gone from saying, well, we shouldn't see race and people shouldn't see anybody as being any different, to what they're saying now is that's a microaggression. You need to be making special cases and special requirements for people that are of other races. And in which case, if it was Jews, then they would have to show that they are Jews, which would mean something like wearing a star or like they have done before, or wearing special hats like they have done before. And again, they wouldn't like that. And yet that is essentially what they're sort of asking for now. And again, this shows that this idea of anti-Semitism is just whatever they don't like, whatever they decide they don't like. There's no actual consistency to it at all.
Sure.
And again, this must have been just commonly talked about at the time. Chesterton portrayed Jews not only as culturally and religiously distinct, but racially as well. In The Feud of the Foreigner in 1920, he said that the Jew is a foreigner far more remote from us than is a Bavarian from a Frenchman. He is divided by the same type of division as that between us and a Chinaman or a Hindu. He not only is not, but never was, of the same race as us, is what he's saying there. And that's something that most people don't quite get today, do they? They think that they're the same as us, because people have been so deracinated that they're not.
Well, history's been distorted, and there's no help.
Well, before I became a nationalist, I couldn't tell that these people on the TV were Jews. I just thought they were obnoxious Americans, and I was very anti-American. I didn't realise that all those funny surnames meant that they were Jewish, and that sense of humour that I didn't like, that was a Jewish sense of humour.
Of course, they tend to change their names as well, don't they?
Well, I always thought these American names, these Stein and Berg and all these weird names, I just thought that they were American for some reason. Obviously, I know better now. But the two of them together, Belloc and Chesterton, and also with somebody called Arthur Penty, they all got together and envisioned the socio-economic system of distributism, which criticized the modern economic order and parliamentary system, advocating for distributism in opposition to both capitalism and socialism. Belloc made the historical argument that distributism was not a fresh perspective or a program of economics, but rather a proposed return to the economics that prevailed in Europe for the 1,000 years when it was Catholic. He called for the dissolution of Parliament and its replacement with committees of representatives for the various sectors of society, an idea that was also popular among fascists under the name of corporatism. And this is interesting because this is what the fascists did, this is what the National Socialists did, and this is admitting that what they were doing was basically the economic system that we had in Europe for 1,000 years when it was Catholic. These ideas of guilds that they had, instead of unions, unions are based on class, whereas the guild is based on that role that people have in life. So within the guild, you would have the owners, the engineers, and you would also have the people lower down in that particular sector, and they'd all be together in this one guild. And that was the Christian idea, that was the Catholic idea. But what we have now is the socialist idea with these unions, which sets one class against another, whereas the guilds promoted class cooperation. So Bolshevism was class war and fascism was class cooperation. And again, this
similar to National Socialism, right?
Yeah. And this shows you the Christian origin of it, basically. Distributism was based upon the principles of Catholic social teaching, especially the teachings of Pope Leo XIII in his encyclical Rerum Novarum, 1891, and Pope Pius XI in Quadragesimo Anno, 1931. It views both capitalism and socialism as equally flawed and exploitative, and it favours economic mechanisms such as cooperatives and member-owned mutual organisations, as well as small businesses and large-scale antitrust regulations. So under this, you would not have any great big companies like Google and YouTube that would be able to just silence people. You would just be able to go to somebody else, and they wouldn't be able to have they wouldn't be able to get rid of you because somebody else had already done that, and that would be going against the law. That would be going against the antitrust regulations. Corporatism was the fascist version, and that advocated for the organisation of society by corporate groups such as agricultural, labour, military, scientific or guild associations on the basis of their common interests. The term is derived from the Latin corpus, or human body. The hypothesis is that society will reach a peak of harmonious functioning when each of its divisions efficiently performs its designated function, the same as a body's organs individually contribute to its general health and functionality. This lies at the centre of corporatist theory and shows the Christian origin of fascist economics, because in Christianity, Christ is the head of the church, and he likens the church and the body of Christians to being the body, basically. And that sets out how things should be based around. It's quite obvious, really, you know, that you would have society based around the human body and how the human body works.
Yeah, it's a perfect example. Something needs repairing, you know, your body, if it's not repaired, your body's going to suffer. Likewise, these nations.
And that's become distorted today because what we have as corporations today, multinational corporations, these big capitalist groups that just exist for making as much money as possible from people. And people hear
corporatism.
Yeah, and when people hear of corporatism, they think of that. And also today, these corporations have now got more power than the politicians. They've got power over the state. You look at look at Twitter, that can just censor Donald Trump's tweets and silence the president of the United States. And again, that could not have happened with the fascist economic ideas. So the people that say that National Socialism and fascism was anti-Christian, it was all based around Christian ideas. That's where these ideas originated from. Even the wording they use comes from it, as it says here, the corpus. the human body.
Yeah, which was what World War II seemingly was all about, this holy war which was declared by the Jews.
Well, now we've had that little diversion into learning about those two people. I just thought it was interesting because, you know, they came up in this introduction and having a little look into what each of them did. They were, and again, they were both Catholic and very big on their Catholicism as well, traditional Catholicism. And it just shows us that there was an alternative that was being presented to the Masonic ideas of Bolshevism and world revolution and socialism and capitalism. There was an alternative, and it went by different names, but it was essentially Christian, whether it was corporatism, distributism, fascism, national socialism, and all of those forces came together to fight against the revolutionary forces in that war, in the Second World War, when all the Waffen-SS went and fought in Russia. That was the big fight when the two forces came together. Because I think today also we look at it and we think, oh, well, it was the Nazis against the rest. And it wasn't. It was different organizations and different groups and different strands of thought that were fighting against another strand of thought, as it were. Because these guys weren't supportive of Hitler, and yet their ideas were in the same spectrum, as it were. And also, this ties in with why the Catholic Church was supportive of National Socialism originally.
Yeah, and it also ties in with why Freemasonry did infiltrate the Church and ban the Pope from the Versailles Peace Treaty.
Well, yeah, and also, I mean, the Masons would want to cut this out of the root, wouldn't they? They would want to go right to the origins of where these ideas are coming from, and they know that they come from the Bible, they come from Christianity. So that's the main thing they want to attack. If they can get rid of that, then everything else they know comes from, everything else is downstream from that, isn't it? It's all downstream from the Church.
They're trying to demonize and blacken it as best they can, whether it's the Catholic Church or whether it's Nazism. They'll do the best to turn people away from it, which they've been pretty successful in doing so.
Well, getting back to the book on Freemasonry here. The retention by the Grand Lodge of England, then, of the article relating to the great architect of the universe does not signify that English Masonry is Christian, for English Masonry does not accept the supremacy of the mystical body of Christ. On the contrary, English Masonry is anti-supernatural and anti-Christian, just like the other sections of the Masonic Brotherhood, for it puts Muhammad and Buddha on the same level as Christ, thus denying Christ's role as the one mediator. Neither does this article mean that English Masonry professes a belief in a transcendent God as we know him, for it is compatible with acceptance of pantheism, that is, with the identification of God with man. The retention of the vague term great architect of the universe enables English Freemasonry to pose as religious while continuing its work of sapping the belief of Englishmen in the divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ and in the reality of that supernatural life of grace coming to us from him, by which we are true men as we ought to be. So again, interesting here, this is showing us the Weasley words that they use. They'll say, oh, it's the great architect of the universe.
Oh, yeah.
And they say that rather than saying Christ, because they could then say that, oh, well, that's Muhammad and Buddha. They're all representatives of the great architect of the universe.
Yeah, they say you have to believe in some kind of deity to actually join Freemasonry, which isn't totally true, but this is what they use certainly over here in the West. And so people, Christians who obviously believe in Christ, believe that that is a deity which is good enough for Freemasonry, which is obviously not really the case. They're just being sucked in and deceived.
Well, they even managed to avoid that, is what he says here, because they accept pantheism. Then it says here that can be just the identification of God with man. So, you know, it may say that you don't even actually have to believe in a transcendent God. You can just believe that man himself can become God.
Yeah, the New Age thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Totally. So it's very subtle the way that it the way that it works. And you know, you may look at this now and think, well, that's not that bad, is it? I mean, half the world.
What do you do with these ideas?
half the world is atheist now. But you think, just this was like 70 years ago or 80 years ago. And, you know, this was really damning stuff, that there was this secret organization that was telling people that there was more than one God and that you didn't need to believe in Jesus. The fact that this is so shocking, or it was so shocking then, tells us how strong the Christian feeling was in Britain and elsewhere.
Definitely.
Do you know what I mean? Liberals would look at that and they'll say, well, that's really not that shocking, is it?
Yeah, well, to Hitler's mother, who was a devout Christian, it would have been something terrible.
And also it's saying that there's, you know, there is no absolute truth, which means that everything is a lie.
Yeah. Means I've never heard of being there, so not to a lie.
Well, let's have a look at the origins of tolerance. This is another word that we hear a lot about. The formation in tolerance, given into the lodges, aims not merely at that negative mental state which puts religious truth and error on the same level, treating them both with indifference. It aims at the production of a positive hatred of what it calls the intolerance of the Catholic Church, namely the Catholic Church's insistence on the divine plan for order. The formation in Masonic tolerance, then, is really a formation in hatred of the firmness and strength of the Catholic Church in standing for the supernatural life and order of the world. This is the ultimate reason why Anglo-Saxon Masonry, ostensibly so conservative, has constantly favoured movements towards the left, opposed to the true order of the world.
Which is what you're seeing today with the rise of all these demonstrations, and the government lackluster in doing anything to prevent it.
Yeah, that's a really good example of it, isn't it? You know, a supposedly Tory government that is going along with the Black Lives Matter and what they're doing there. And, you know, toleration, we were told that we just had to tolerate these homosexual ideas being taught to children. You know, don't be intolerant, just have tolerance for these people. And to think this is the same language was being used back then. And yeah, it's basically tolerance for evil. I mean,
if it's not broke, they won't fix it. It does the job, then it deceives people.
Part of the Gnostic ideas is the blending of opposites. So there is no good, there is no absolute good, there is no absolute evil, there is no absolute male, there is, you know, no absolute female, and it's good to blend the opposites. And that's where you get this idea of the hermaphrodite from, and it's an esoteric symbol, an occult symbol, and that's basically, you know, it's breaking down all morality.
Yeah, and it's why people can't understand the ordinary person today who's not particularly into any of all this kind of, you know, all he has to think about really is supporting his family and trying to get a decent wage. You know, finds it difficult when something like transgenderism suddenly appears, and that, you know, some words now, like women, are frowned on. The word woman is frowned on. So, and they must just walk around shaking their head, these people, because no idea where it's coming from or how it originated.
Well, they make it a they try to make it a virtue to not actually speak up for the truth and not actually speak up for morality. They try to say that it's a virtue if you just allow this degeneracy to go on without speaking up, then you're virtuous. You know, and take it one step further, and having gay marriages in churches and allowing gay adoption and things like that, and they'll make out that you're virtuous if you don't complain about it. You're being very Christian if you don't complain about it.
In this present movement in Poland, they've banned the same-sex marriage. They've also banned sex education for children. So, you know, it's all this is going in the right direction as far as I'm concerned, because I don't really want to know if you know, a 10-year-old knows about anal sex, to be quite honest.
Yeah, they're doing really well in Eastern Europe in resisting this.
And yeah, they're getting criticised from the EU, not there, but...
Well, they're getting much more bold as well in speaking about it.
Yeah.
I noticed. There was a poll they did a while back, or it was just the results of it just got released about the Visegrad countries, and they were saying how a very large percentage of people there, I think it was 60%, something like that, said that immigration is no good. Immigrants mean that your culture will be weakened down and you will be replaced. And the Visegrad countries are promoting that as a good thing. Look how sensible our people are. Whereas,
yeah, we look at Poland, they can walk around at night quite safe from knife attacks of immigrants. You know, that's something that a Polish family, and they have also started giving money to families. There's one particular family mentioned already had 8 children, was given $200 for each child a month, and they're intending having more children, which again is moving things in the right direction. But we're really quite pleased at watching the documentary.
Well, and also the EU will try to shame these countries with polls like that, and but instead of, you know, backing down, it's these countries themselves that are now promoting them and saying, look, you know, look how sensible our people are, and we don't have terrorism in our countries, and we haven't had Black Lives Matter riots, and none of our statues have been pulled down. You know, and they're really, yeah, you know, they're the ones laughing now, aren't they, when we look around at our countries?
Exactly, because they're in the safe environment of their own borders. Just a quick brief touch on the Black Lives Matter, that there was an airplane flown over the Manchester City football ground this week saying White Lives Matter, and he's been banned for life now from Berlin Football Club. Which to me, you know, if you can say Black Lives Matter, there's no reason why you can't say White Lives Matter. All lives matter, but it's not looked on like that.
The really shocking thing about that was there was a professor in one of the universities, I think it was not Oxford, the other one, I momentarily forget the name of it, Cambridge University, and she said, white lives don't matter. White lives don't matter at all. And she got promoted to being a bit above professor, and a university backed her. Well, the guy that said white lives matter, he lost his job. He got ostracized for it. The press were screaming that he should lose his job. His girlfriend lost his job. And he's been banned from football for life just for saying white lives matter in the same week that three white men were brutally stabbed in broad daylight in a park by a refugee from Libya.
Yeah.
And if you can't say white lives matter in a context like that, then
it was significantly a white country.
Yeah. The only one good thing I can say about that is the police investigated it and they said there was no crime. He hadn't committed a crime. So, you know, the police could have been political and tried to go after him, and they didn't, which I think is good. Well, getting back to this, we've now got designated enemy states, which nowadays they call them regimes, but back in the 50s, they started calling them tyrannies. States will be assailed as tyrannies in proportion to the extent in which they accept our Lord's program for order. In Catholic countries, violent revolution will be always aimed at in order to get rid of the existing social structure in which the kingship of Christ is respected. And it's moved on from that to violent revolution in Protestant countries now. In Britain, we've got violent revolution that's going on. But what they're saying here is it will be these Catholic countries that it will be aimed at first.
Yeah, Christianity it will not be spared.
Poland.
Whatever the faith or the split Christianity faith.
And the fact that the press will call them tyrannies. I mean, they call them regimes, don't they? I mean, they've got close to calling the Orban's government a regime.
I noticed they had a rally in Poland, and they were all elderly, you know, a lot of elder people there as well, all saying the Lord's Prayer, and the guy come on talking, saying this right-wing revolution, what's going on, making out to be terrorists.
Well, they also said about Orban that he was ruling by decree, as if he was a dictator, because of the rule that the special powers that he had to give himself to enact a quarantine because of corona. Only the same laws as all the other countries in the EU had, but he was being accused of ruling by decree and getting rid of democracy. And that's the same thing that it's talking about here.
And I think democracy is understood by a lot of people. It is not the ideology it is meant to be.
You can't have it unless you have freedom of speech, basically.
Well, that's one thing, yeah, but it's really a first step to socialism, which is another step to communism.
You can't have a functioning democracy if you don't have freedom of speech, because people, you know, they have the wool pulled over their eyes, so it can't work. You know, you can't actually. You have to have people that are well informed to be making these decisions. If they're not well informed, then it just becomes the rule of the mob, and that's unfortunately the sort of democracies we have now is the worst way to run a democracy, I think.
That's right. Yeah, because we saw what the mob did to the statues.
Yeah, what you should have is the people that are most qualified. Like with these guilds, you know, the people that are the very best at agriculture, say, they should be responsible for the agricultural sector, and they should be the ones voting on what the agricultural sector do. And that's the way democracy should work, not go to the mob and say, who do you think should be in charge of everything, or what party do you think should be in charge? There should just be one party that represents the British people. Or one party that represents the English people, represents the Welsh people.
Interests in that heart, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because why would you want to have two different parties fighting it out? You would just want a party that represents your interests, regardless of if it's right or left. Just represent my interests. That's all people are interested in. Let's look at these Protestant countries here as well. The Protestant countries will not be spared. For behind Freemasonry is the more cohesive naturalistic force of the Jewish nation, with its messianic aim of domination over all nations. Any vestiges of the rule of the true supernatural Messiah must be swept away. A highly placed personage, whose name he does not reveal, said to the distinguished historian Cardinal Pietra at Vienna in 1889, "The Catholic nations must be crushed by the Protestant nations. When this result has been attained, a breath will be sufficient to bring about the disappearance of Protestantism." And again, that's very true, and that is what we see is going on now. It's not taking much to destroy this whole idea of civic nationalism and this support for Winston Churchill. I mean, if you look at Boris Johnson, he wrote the biography of Winston Churchill, and yet here he is now saying, "Oh well, we might have to put him in a museum." No backbone. No backbone. Yeah. And what it's saying here, just a breath will be sufficient to knock them down, basically.
I watched this debate on how people couldn't get their heads around all these statues. You know, from one minute it's a slave trader, the next minute it's Robert the Bruce in Scotland, the next minute trying to take Churchill down. And this guy couldn't understand where we're all coming from. Somebody explained it quite simply. These people want to destroy our society, so any statue is going to be in the way. It's not the statues they take down you've got to worry about, it's the statues they're going to put up.
Well, they're talking about replacing them with images of themselves. I mean, it couldn't get more blatant than that. We're going to pull down that picture of you, and I'm going to put a picture of myself up instead. And that's what Khan is doing. He said Mayor Khan has set up a committee to look at place names, statues, everything in London. And if he can find a tenuous link to slavery or racism, he's going to remove that, and then he's going to replace it with images that are more representative of how London looks now. So essentially, images of himself. He said, with diversity. So he wants to replace them with pictures of and images of brown people, the people that are there now, the conquerors, because that's what the conquerors do. They take down all the images of the people that were there before, and they replace them with the images of themselves.
Yep. Which is exactly what happened in Poland when the Soviet Union took all the statues down, put statues of Lenin.
Exactly. And if we don't have a strong ideology there, then it's just going to happen, isn't it? This is what we see with Boris Johnson. What is his ideology? Is he a proud Christian? Is he a proud nationalist? Is he very proud to be British? Has he been adopted as being British, even though he's got partial partial Turkish race? There's nothing there.
I'm not convinced. Yeah, you know, he's been weak on immigration. They've been bringing over 1,000 a day down south while this lockdown's been going on.
He's got no ideology. He's got no identity. He's got nothing solid there to resist against these forces.
Yeah.
You know, what is the ideology of Britain now? There isn't one. British values, we accept everyone. We have tolerance for everything. Well, how is that going to protect you when you've got the forces of chaos trying to destroy your heritage? If your greatest value is tolerance for everything and just allowing it all to happen.
Well, it's the only country in the world I can think of where, you know, a Muslim can be in charge of the capital. I mean, I could never imagine in Saudi Arabia a Christian being a mayor of the capital of Saudi Arabia. Never.
Well, I can't imagine an Englishman being a mayor of Riyadh in Saudi Arabia.
No.
Or wherever their capital is. I mean, that's the thing.
Somewhere in this racist country of ours, we have Muslims in power.
Well, the other thing is you would think, you know, if everything that they tell us is true and they're just like us, then if we did have somebody that was non-white and they got to a high position, then they would be doing their very, very best not to be biased, not to appear to have any favoritism, not to appear to have any loyalty to non-whites at all. You would imagine that in actual fact, Khan in London would be more loyal to the whites because he would be trying to show that this idea that we're all equal is correct. And he's not. He does the complete opposite, doesn't he?
That's it. Yeah, he's coming from a position of power now.
And just that little bit of power and look at the destruction that he does with it. I mean, this is a warning. What he's doing is a warning because, 60% non-white in the capital now, but it's only 15% non-white throughout the rest of the country. So what he's doing to the capital is what will happen to the rest of the country if something isn't done to prevent it, if something isn't done to incentivize these people to go back to their own countries. I mean, that's all that needs to be done. It can be turned around, but we have to take note of the warning signs. And that is one big warning sign.
I don't see anybody standing up to do that.
Well, you know, you mentioned Nigel Farage there, and he has spoken up against Black Lives Matter. He said they're like the Taliban, they're like ISIS, they're Marxists, they're anarchists. Yeah. And you have to give him credit for that because he is the only one in the establishment that is doing that. So,
he's the only one who's compared it to the Bolshevik revolutions to refer to him.
Yeah, well, at least we've got him. At least we've got him. Yeah. Well, the alternative to communism is Catholicism. How do you say Catholicism? Catholicism. Freemasons in England and the United States will yield to pressure from leaders of the Jewish nation, even when the interests of England and the United States obviously suffer. The Brooklyn Tablet, May 14, 1949, quoted the frank statements of the American Senate of Senator Owen Brewster of Maine, a non-Catholic. Speaking of the attitude towards Spain, the senator said, "Spain is not recognized because Spain is a Catholic country. The subtle word is constantly passed that the alternative to communism is Catholicism. We know the word is constantly uttered in the lobbies, although senators do not care to bring it out on the floor." So he's admitting here that Catholicism is the alternative to communism. And also here where it's saying that England and the United States will yield to pressure from leaders of the Jewish nation. I mean, if it was obvious back then in 1949, how much more obvious is it now with wars in Syria and Iraq, and with Jeremy Corbyn being kicked out of the Labour Party and the Labour Party not winning the vote? And they just yield to the pressure all the time, regardless of whether it's going to be of any benefit to the British people. Just look at Lord Dubs calling for more refugee children to be allowed into the country. And just today we've had refugees stabbing people in Scotland. So it's obviously not in our best interests to bring these people in, but because somebody Jewish has advocated for it, our leaders will yield to their pressure. So what he is saying here in 1949, it's absolutely come true. And it's far more visible now than it ever was before, even back then.
Mm. That's right.
I mean, I'm just trying to think exactly what was sort of happening in 1949. I should imagine that would have been just after when the Jews had blown up the King David Hotel in Israel, and we had the Stern Gang and the Ergun and all these Jewish terrorists that were attacking British servicemen when it was Britain that had actually given them that country in the first place and built it for them and fought that war, and the repayment we had for it were all these terrorist actions against our servicemen. And today they don't even have a wreath laid for them on Memorial Day, on Remembrance Sunday. Yeah. They're not even mentioned, these servicemen that were killed by these terrorists. That's what was going on round about this time. And now they have this, they have total control, basically. All of this can be tied back to this emancipation of the Jews, this plan of the Freemasons to give them equal rights, put them on an equal footing. And we went along with it. We fell for it. We fell for the ruse. And now we are paying the price of that. This is the consequences of our actions in going along with these revolutions, in believing that instead of believing better the devil you know, we thought, well, we'll just go along with turning everything on its head and we know better. Whereas what the Catholic Church is saying is you should have listened to the Catholic Church and not overturned everything.
Correct.
And stuck with Christ's law. Finally here, he talks about the confusion of most Christians. In our time, more than ever before, said the saintly Pius X at the beatification of Joan of Arc in 1908, the greatest asset of the evil disposed is the cowardice and weakness of good men, and all the vigour of Satan's reign is due to the easygoing weakness of Catholics. Oh, if I might ask the divine Redeemer, as the prophet Zachary did in spirit, what are those wounds in the midst of thy hands? The answer would not be doubtful. With these I was wounded in the house of them that loved me. I was wounded by my friends who did nothing to defend me, and who on every occasion made themselves the accomplices of my adversaries. And this reproach can be levelled at the weak and timid Catholics of all countries.
Well, that can be said of all Christianity, not just the Catholics. I mean, people in the future must one day look back and think, just where were the men at this time in England?
Well, that's just it, isn't it? I mean, he's talking about where are the Catholics, you know, where are the Protestants? Where are all the good men that need to be speaking up about this? And this was written by Dennis Fahey. Or Dennis Fahey. I've seen his name before somewhere. I can't think where. At the Feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, June 16th, 1950.
Probably past the statue before it was taken down.
You did mention about the Freemason in America, didn't you? And his statue was never going to get taken down. Well, it did get taken down. It did get pulled down.
Pike?
Yeah, Pike. Pike's statue was got it? Pulled down last week, yes.
Well, that's a challenge for the book.
And what that shows is that, they haven't got control of the barbarians, have they? The barbarians
obviously
are on the
not.
Loose.
Well, I thought they're allowing them to do as they please for now.
Yeah, they're on the loose trying to take down civilization.
Yeah, but, these are useful idiots. They will, like Brezhnev said, who managed to escape the KGB when he comes to Canada, he said that these people are useful idiots, and for them to be, when you get to the point where they realise that they're not going to be the ones who have any power, will be the most ferocious against that regime, and so they will just be up against the wall and shot. But for now, they're letting them run riot.
Yeah, and then they're biting them back, basically. The snake is biting its own tail. I wonder how long it can go on for before they really do start getting some blowback. So, you know, that's just the first sign of it, I think. Then going after a Freemason statue. You've also got Ice Cube or Ice-T, who is exposing some of the things that the Jews have been up to on his Twitter feed. Yeah, I don't know if he's had his Twitter feed banned yet, but he's got millions of people there that are watching what he's saying.
This is in the music industry, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They really are playing with fire, and all of this was foretold by these brave Catholic men. We're not saying the whole Catholic Church was like this. This was, there were times when it was the majority, But now they were in the minority, and they were gradually going down, going right up to the Second World War. But at the time, in the late 1890s, going forward to 1940, I think that, you know, the Catholic Church was in the position to purge itself of all the leftists and all the liberals. That's right. But, you know, unfortunately they failed, and now we've got the old Rainbow Pope in power.
Yes, yes, the Rainbow Pope.
All right, well, that brings us to the end today, Dennis. Thank you very much for coming on.
No problem.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.